Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Beautifully Designed Game podcast. Today, I'm happy to be speaking to the Joshua Kimmick of the sports creative world, Dave Flanagan. Dave, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Yeah, good to speak to you.
And for those who are wondering about the Joshua Kimmick reference, I think if you have a look at Dave's portfolio, give him a brief with any given art direction and he'll be able to master it. Dave, it really is something about your portfolio, that the style variants you've got. Can you just talk us through your portfolio and the clients that you've worked with and what it is that makes you so adaptable? Without putting you on the spot straight away.
In terms of adaptable, I'm not sure. I suppose that I don't so much get asked in a brief to produce. I mean, I do get asked to produce new pieces of work, but not specific. A lot of the times it's stuff that I've created and put out there and then someone's seen it and then come to me and said, oh, we like that. They might change it a bit. They might ask for more from it, but they see what I've done and then they ask for that and more. It's not so much, I don't think I have clients that go out, I want you to do a specific other thing as such. It's usually what I've created. I think it comes from a bit of, I worked for 20 years as a graphic designer. So I think some of it comes from the fact that I used to have clients that I used to manage who had the same brand guidelines for everything. So everything you did was, you know, the blue block here, had a piece of text here, you had to put your image here. And it used to kill me. But I did it for years. And then I got to a point where that client changed and I said, well, we could do all these other things. And they were like, oh, great. So I did lots of other things. And then the next time they went to the project, I went, well, we don't have to do it the same as that. We could do it this way. We could do it that way. And I absolutely loved it. So that for the last 3 years of me working there, I was just, let's do something different every time. And I think that's when I sort of started doing my illustration stuff. And I started like going, well, I don't have to be a children's book illustrator. That's what I used to think illustration was. You have to be a children's book illustrator and you have to do cartoons, you have to do this, that, and the other. And then you start to see different things online. And I think like I used to see things like that, you know, like the Head Candy CD covers and stuff. And it was like vector art. And I used to think like, well, how do you create that? And then I remember someone saying, oh, I think it's airbrush and stuff. And then it's this and the other. So, but then I was using Illustrator a lot. And you start realizing you can create stuff in Illustrator. And then I just started, I didn't have a specific style. I just started illustrating anything really. But I never worked out how you could get work from it. So I worked out one day if I drew some footballers, that's what I enjoy. So I did some illustrations of footballers and then I got commissions from it. And then it's just, you know, 9 years ago, whenever that started, it just escalated through social media and then you pick up football clients. So I did a picture of David Silva, put it onto Flickr, which is like, who uses Flickr now? And then this agency in Manchester saw it, worked with Man City, and they said, can you do the whole squad? And I just thought they were taking the mic, because I was like, you know, so I illustrated the whole squad, but it wasn't even my style. It was like, it was something I'd just developed because I thought it was a nice style. You know, I'd seen stuff online and then I developed that on, but I never wanted to go and do that forever. So as soon as I did that, I didn't do anything with it because I wasn't that interested in doing that style forever. So I did some like simpler footballers kicking balls and then Arsenal got in touch. They hadn't seen my City work. They'd just seen this new work. So Arsenal got in touch. And then next thing I was doing work for Arsenal. And then I did some other work and then I got involved with like the BT project and stuff like that. And it all sort of escalates. But then I've always got to be trying something new and doing something new and showing people the new stuff. Once you've got that audience, if you throw something new in front of an art director, they go, oh, I like that. Can we do something with that? And that's how it kind of works for me, I think. I think people see different projects or see things I put out and then they want that stuff and get in touch. And that's how my work's gone on forever.
But that's really interesting to know that it's really driven by yourself and your own, like your own kind of desire to try different things.
Yeah, and I think everyone, I don't know about you, but I get emails all the time from people, other illustrators starting out and stuff, and they say, how do you get these clients? And like, I think they think that I like ring people up or I email companies or I've never done that, you know. I mean, I've only ever done it once. That was to Preston North End because they're near me and they still didn't get back to me. So that doesn't work. But basically, is I put work out and people get in touch with me. So what I've always given advice is it sounds that, but do good work or do work that people will notice and people will get interested, inspired by and use you in their projects. They'll find a place for you. They'll find a project. And that's how it's worked for me. And I'm very lucky in some respects in that people have seen it and it's taken off. But then I've been thinking about a lot, during lockdown and things like that. And it is luck, but it's also hard work. It's also getting, getting good work out there and people going, actually, I can use that rather than actually being lucky and someone picked it up on that day and whatever, I mean, one of my favorite stories is that I did work for CNN and they got in touch with me and I'm a bit obsessed by Donald Trump. Not in like I like him, in a sort of, I'm so obsessed that this man can be president and I'm a bit obsessed with. And then CNN got in touch and said, we want an illustration of Donald Trump for an article on him and religion. We've seen your stained glass stuff and we really want you to do a stained glass window of Donald Trump. And I was like, can I just ask, how did you hear about me? And they went, well, I'm a big football fan in America. And I'd seen your Yaya Toure thing from ages. I'd saved it. He said he saved it. And then when people were in a meeting at CNN, having a meeting, we're talking about, couldn't we have like a stained glass window thing? He went, I know this guy who does stained glass windows. And they got in touch with me. Like, it's just daft, isn't it? CNN in New York, start having a meeting and a guy goes, I know a guy. And because, I have a sort of style where I do stained glass windows sort of stuff, graphic stuff.
Yes.
But nothing really came from that. I did a couple of bits of projects on stuff, but it was all personal work, but something came from it. You do random stuff and it seems something comes from it and someone will see it.
But that also shows the value in, it's not just your latest work that has meaning or has value in it. Everything that you do, everything that you do can work for you, and can still have relevance for you. And it's not always about, I think it's very easy to fall into a trap of thinking, oh, I have to do new stuff and I have to be pushing new stuff out all the time. As long as the work is good and it has a platform to be visible, it can always kind of work hard for you. I guess we've maybe jumped in a wee bit.
Sorry.
Can you please talk people? Well, it's my fault. Can you just let people know where they can find you online?
My website's daveflanagan.co.uk. Twitter, I'm at Dave Flanagan. And Instagram is at DaveFlanagan77.
Confused by Dave O'Flanagan.
Yeah, he was an illustrator. Yeah. I messaged him a few times, there's that going on. It's one of those things, isn't it? Like, as soon as Instagram and Twitter took off, I was getting commissions all the time, but I was working as a graphic designer and getting commissions from some of the biggest clubs in Britain and stuff like that. I mean, I was working as a graphic designer and then going home and working at night doing projects for Man City and Juventus and things like that, England rugby, it's crazy.
So can you talk us through how is that transition from working full time as a graphic designer in an agency to then getting to the point where, right, I'm ready to be doing this full time and then to move on to the client list that you've got now?
Well, it's the scariest thing ever in terms of taking it on as a full-time thing. I was interested in art at school. I went to college, did a BTEC in graphic design. I went on to study an HND in graphic design. I was very lucky getting a job in Preston, working at a design agency, a really good design agency in Preston. But it was very much certain types of client, risk sensitive clients, industrial based clients and things. And I did it for 20 years, and I enjoyed it, and I was part of that family for 20 years. But I kind of, if I think if I'd lived in Manchester or London, I'd have moved around to different agencies, but because I live where I live. Mm-hmm. So I then obviously developed styles during that process of and worked with these bigger clients. What was the question again? I've gone literally...
Just the movement from working full-time in an agency.
Sorry, that was where I was on that path. Sorry. I've gone down that path and I'm like, I've gone down this cul-de-sac, I don't know where I am. I was earning all right money and I had a good job. I was a design director there, you know. Been there 20 years and we had two kids. We literally had another child on the way. And I said to my wife, I said, you know, this is what I'm doing at home in my spare time has got too big. And I could just step off this being in this agency and go on my own. And I think we'll be all right. And we've obviously got savings because I've been doing two jobs for a period of time. And I said, you know, I don't think it's as big a risk as it would have been in the past. And I was doing more the management side in the graphic design thing. So I was designing less and managing more. So I loved meeting clients and I loved managing people and projects, but I wasn't getting that creativity out myself. And when I was, it wasn't exciting me that much. So I ended up said to my wife, well, you know, let's just do it. Let's just work from home. I'll get to see our kid grow up, our third child grow up, you know, I'll get to take the kids to school and be part of the community. And that's what happened. I just walked in one day to work and said, can I have a word? And I said, I'm leaving. They were like, what? You know, because it was obviously I was managing, you know, one of the biggest clients and things like that. And they were sort of a bit shocked. But I said, I've just something I've got to do. And it was nothing to do with them. It was all me. I'd evolved into something that was different. You know, they're a brilliant agency and they're brilliant people. You know, I could go working back there. I'm not saying I could go back. They'd let me back. I'm saying, but I could work for them again because they were a brilliant agency. But I just had to do this thing. Because if I hadn't done it, I'd have either been working every night still and not seeing my kids, or I'd have given it up and then wondered if I'd ever done it. And then watch you guys all go on, and, you know, watch on social media as you guys work with all these clubs. So the transition was the scariest thing ever. Walking out of that building and saying goodbye to everyone and then going home and sitting at my desk and going, right, this is me now, was the scariest thing in the world. But it's been two and a bit years now, full time. And in that time, I've started managing my kids' football team. I know most of the parents at school. I watched my little one grow up because she was literally, the day I left, my little one, my third one when Charlotte was born. So I was literally left work, next day child was born. And then, so I've watched her grow up every moment, not missed the, you know, anything.
That's fantastic.
And it's the best way to be. It's lockdown's one thing, but I would say to everyone's going, oh, it's lockdown's crazy. I said, I've been in lockdown for 2 years, you know, I'm going crazy now, you know, this is just advanced stuff.
So there was a real lifestyle choice as well as, I have the work to be doing this all the time. There was a lifestyle choice as well.
Yeah. It was to be at home more, be part of the community more. I used to work till, you know, 6 or 7 every night, start working at 9, 6, 7 every night. I would get in home, having my tea, putting the kids to bed and then watching TV and then going to work. And like, it's fine because you're earning a wage and you pay your mortgage. But from a lifestyle point of view, it's completely changed. You know, I have more time with my family. I have more time for me. You know, I mean, the only thing now is I've got certain clients. I'm getting busier again. Where I'm getting to the point where I'm getting that way where I'm too busy in terms of some of my clients. But that's about management now. But it's my management, not someone else telling me I've got to come in and do it.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people get in touch with me and say, "How do you get your clients? Or how do you get started?" And things like that. I would honestly say to a young illustrator, a young designer, this is my personal point of view, but go and work for a design agency or something like that for a couple of years, 2 or 3 years. You'll learn more in those 2 or 3 years about the industry, how to talk to clients, how the print process works, how to make PDFs, all the different things that you don't think you need to know and you'll struggle with if you don't. Go and do 2 or 3 years in an agency or some sort of design related thing, and you'll learn so much. Because I know how to deal with clients. I know you should never be arsy with a client.
Yes,
you know, I know that you should never, you know, send an email that they're going to be upset about or anything like that. Even if they send you something and you're really angry about it, you can word it back to them. Yeah. Because once you've lost that client, you've lost that client. And I've sent emails in the past where I've not even meant to be rude and the clients got upset and things like that. You've got to really think about it. But I've learned that over 20 years. I understand, because I was that client. I used to commission illustrators. So I know that I wouldn't use an illustrator again if they were arsy with me, or I wouldn't use an illustrator again if they delivered bad work or they didn't deliver on time. So I know, and I think I've learned over those 20, I'm not saying do it for 20 years, that's sure. a bit extreme, but I think you learn a lot from working in industry to take into then your freelance career. And I know some people just go straight into freelance and they'll be brilliant at it, but I think some people struggle understanding certain elements of the industry that they really need to know about. That's personally what I think.
No, absolutely. So I worked, I got a similar-ish background working in ad agencies, but I was more in production. So I got to the level of creative services director, and then it was a case of keeping on doing that or going on to do what I really want to do. Yeah. But I've found, especially in the early years, really getting a kind of, because you almost develop a wee mini industry for yourself, don't you, in a way that works for you and how you approach people and who you work with. And I was the same as yourself, the one that would look for relevant freelance talent to be working on certain briefs. And so having being sat in that chair over there, you understand, right, this is how to approach people. And it's not enormous rocket science as such. Be polite, be professional, and then you go from there.
Yeah. And it's also, like you say, if you're polite and professional and you deliver on time, delivery, when I used to work as a graphic designer, if you didn't deliver, you were dead. You know, you have to deliver. You know, if you've promised for that time, you have to deliver for that time. If you can't, you need to let them, you need to let them know in enough time. You need to know the reasons and excuses and whatever that is so that they understand it. But it's got to be communication, understanding all the way through. And I've understand that. I've learned that over years, that I've worked for Arsenal now for 8 or 9 years, bits and bobs and different projects and stuff I've loved. But that's because when they contact me, I deliver. Now, if they said, I need it by next Tuesday and I can't deliver by next Tuesday, I'm brutally honest and I say, look, I'm going away for 2 days and I can't do it. Really sorry, but blah, blah, blah. Whereas you'll get some people go, actually, if I stayed up all night and I did this, you've got to be honest with yourself and them, because if you don't deliver, they don't come back. And you'll know that you also work with people who on one project worked for this club and then they moved and worked for this other organization. Yes. And said, oh, I know that guy and bring you back. So reputation is everything. So I remember being someone asking me and they said, you know, well, how do I get the clients if I haven't got the big work yet and stuff like that? And I remember saying, oh, it doesn't matter because you'll get the work out there. But it does matter in a lot of respect in terms of if someone looks at your portfolio, like, you know, and they go, oh, he's worked with England Rugby, he's worked with Juventus, he's worked with Arsenal. They know, this guy's going to deliver for me. Mm. So it's reputation and trust, but delivery is everything. If you don't deliver, it's no good, is it? So
Well, and at the same time, being honest with yourself and with the client. Don't say yes to every deadline. Don't put yourself under enormous pressure to deliver work that you're not sure about. The client will appreciate all the honesty in the world.
Yes, they will, definitely.
And you are a human being, you're not a machine, you don't sit in a chair and churn out work 24/7, you know, and a client's going to appreciate the fact that, oh, right, yeah, Dave's away for 2 days next week with his family.
Yeah, right, yeah, he is a leeway. Usually, absolutely, they're telling you Tuesday, but they've got till Friday or the Tuesday the next week, because what they're trying to do is get it in enough time so that they've got time and buffer to maybe commission the illustrator if you mess up or whatever it is. They will usually be honest with you and say, actually, I can give you a couple more days, or we really want to work with you and stuff like that. And you know, you get these emails and there'll be someone saying, right, I want to build an app and I want a portrait of every footballer from the Premier League. And when can you do it? And you're like, I send them emails back and I say, right, I understand you want to build this app, but do you understand you need to now illustrate how many hundred players you need to then do that in how many weeks? So I'd have to produce 5 portraits a day and not sleep and stuff. I don't do it in a rude way, but I just explain to them that, I'll be honest with you, this isn't doable from me or anyone, you know.
Yeah.
But I imagine there's people out there who will go, I've got this brief and they're building this app and I'm going to do 500 illustrations. And then you go, well, how much are they paying you? Well, if you divide it up, it's £5 a portrait. You know what I mean? It's you've got to look at things and be brutally honest and say, look, what you need to do is think about your project or your app or whatever it is you're building and then find someone who helps that. So I sometimes send emails back where I know I'm not interested in the project, but I'll send it back and say, think about these things when you're commissioning the next guy, because I'm honest in that way as well. I get a lot of those sort of emails.
It's the only way to be, I think, because you're educating others on areas that they might not understand. Someone might not have a grasp of how much time or work is involved on a project. And so rather than them assuming that what they've asked for is correct, if you can go back and say, actually, in terms of planning, this is how it would all need to be worked out best. And then the project can go accordingly. And that means that you yourself, as the illustrator or the creative on it, you're having your input on how to achieve the best work, which is what everyone all wants to achieve anyway.
I mean, we've all done it. We've all done those silly projects where we've taken something on that we shouldn't have taken on. We do it early doors, but in experience, you know now that you get that email and you know straight away, you go, well, I can't do that and I'm not doing that. Whereas when we first started out, we probably would have gone, well, I could probably work through the nights for 5 weeks or whatever it is. And you just end up being silly, don't you? I mean, and I was talking to, I went to a Dan Woodger. Have you heard of Dan Woodger?
Yes, yeah.
Amazing illustrator. I love his stuff. And I went to one of his talks and he did a talk and he said that this company got in, and I think it was like a massive company, like it was in Google or something like that, but it wasn't, but it was something like that. And they'd asked him to produce hundreds of emojis for this thing.
Yes.
And he just said, I can do that. And he set off, but he said, killed himself doing it, because he was like doing so many every day and trying to get them out, and in some ways he learned loads developing a style through making all those things, and also he got a big client, but it was a silly project to take on because it was so much work, and it, you know, and I think it's like he would say, you learn from that, and the next one you do, you go, mate, you're gonna need 6 months for this, not 6 weeks or whatever it is, you know.
Can we just change topic slightly, and can you let us know about Dave Flanagan, Football Manager? How are you? Tell us about your approach to managing your daughter's team.
No, it's my little lad's team.
Sorry, little lads.
Approach to managing his team. I was doing coaching last night, and it's so because they're only 8. You know, I managed them from under 7s, under 8s, and this is my third season under 9s.
Okay.
And they've gone from 5-a-side football now, and they're now up to 7-a-side football on a bigger pitch.
Right.
And you feel like you understand football. I've watched football all my life. I've played football myself. I've played 11-a-side for, 20 years or whatever, and I played 5-a-side for loads of years. And you think, I understand the game and stuff. But when it comes to 8-year-olds who won't even look, you're talking to them and they're looking at the clouds, and trying to explain to him a formation and stuff in 7-a-side. And then, it's all enjoyable, but it's stressful at the same time. But my approach is try and get it forward. That's my approach. Nah. Very much. Try and get the ball forwards. We can't seem to get out of our own half. So I can't be that good a coach. I love it to bits, though. I honestly love it to bits. We had our third child and I quit my job. My little lad was just starting out. He was 7. He was just starting out playing for the local team. And my wife said to me, oh, they're looking for people to help out. And I went along to the training session. And when I got home, my wife said, oh, how did it go? And I said, I'm the coach. Because they were looking for a coach. So my wife was like, what? So then every Saturday, I've got all the footballs and the kits. And so, yeah, so I'm I love it, though. Absolutely love it.
Oh, good for you. Yeah. And as a player, tell us about Dave Flanagan, the player.
I've always been a lowish standard, but I love football. When I was at school, I was the smallest in the year. I was tiny.
Okay.
I was like the goalkeeper. I was just like spring. I could save anything, sort of thing. But then I got a bit older, and I was always sort of defence. So yeah, I was a right back for a long time, and then the older you get, the wiser you get. So centre back. And I've just been a defender. I'm one of those players. I always say it to my lads. I say there's those players who can dribble, take past three players and scorch your top corner. There are players that can know where everyone is in the pitch and they can make a pinpoint pass. There's all sorts of players. I stop people playing. I realised after a long time, there's nothing wrong with that. That's my job. Stop people playing and I'm good at it. So, as a central defender, and that striker wants to do this and they want to do that, and that I know how to stop you. And that was my thing. And that's what I do. Is I knew how to get my foot in the right place to block a shot, when to slide tackle, when not to, when to win the header, when not to. When that striker thinks he's winning that ball, I'm winning that ball. And I was never any great standard at all. I was always like, you know, local team, second team or whatever. But that was what I was good at, stopping. Whereas my little lad can dribble past four or five players. I love it to bits. He can like get the ball and dribble all the way up the pitch.
And
I love that. But I was never good enough to be that. So I worked out, because I love football so much, I worked out what I was good at and I did that the best of my ability.
Yeah.
What
is some of your earliest footballing memories?
Playing or watching?
Watching or memories of the sport. I guess it could be watching, yeah.
Playing, I loved high school. We only did it for like 2 or 3 years because the teacher left and then they quit doing football. But we won the cup in the first year. So like when I was at school, I played with the team. And if you were in the football team, that was it. You know, you were in with all the cool kids sort of thing. But I loved it. And we won the cup and we got semi-finals and stuff like that. And that was good. And then football memories in terms of watching and things like that. Well, I used to, when I was really young, I was a Liverpool fan because my best mate was a Liverpool fan. And we live in a place that's kind of halfway between Southport and Preston, but it's close to Liverpool and close to Manchester sort of thing. So around our way, you were either a Man United fan or a Liverpool fan.
Okay.
So everyone was Man United or Liverpool, you know. And there wasn't much else. There maybe a couple of Preston fans or Everton fans, but they're only dotted. So when I was really small, I was a Liverpool fan. But my dad and my family are big Man City fans. So my dad used to take me to City games all the time. So I used to enjoy going to City games and stuff. So my early memories of going to Main Road and watching City play was a pretty dire football. But what I remember from that is the walk to the ground with my dad, because my grandparents lived on Princess Road in Manchester, which is like, you know, Edgemoss side-ish, you know, right near the ground.
Yeah.
So we used to walk down the back alleys to the ground. The fans used to turn up. You know, you get in there and everyone would be, you know, most people would be smoking. They'd all be drinking Bovril or whatever they were drinking. And I remember all the smells and the red faces. There always used to be fellas who drank, you know, I didn't realize at the time, drank too much with the red cheeks and stuff like that. And we used to go with my granddad. He used to always bring a bag, so he had a cushion for his seat and he had his flask and all the different things. And memories. So I remember that. But I got to a certain age, because my dad wasn't like, you've got to be a City fan. He just went, we're going to City, are you coming? And he didn't mind that I was a Liverpool fan because I was only small. And Liverpool were the big team at the time. You know, they were winning everything. And he even took me to the 1986 final, you know, the Liverpool Wimbledon. Was it 86? I actually went to that final when they lost to Wimbledon. And I was, after that, I was still going to City games. And I just realised I was a City fan. It was like, even though Liverpool were winning everything and City were winning nothing, you go, I'm part of this, not part of that. So like
it's
my best mate carried on being Liverpool.
Connection within you, yeah.
Yeah, so my best mate carried on being a Liverpool fan. And I just went, actually, I'm a City fan. And it wasn't for any reason. It wasn't because City had gone on and done this or done that. I just went, my dad, my granddad, I go with them, I cheer them on. So why am I pretending I'm a Liverpool fan when I get home and stuff? So so that's how it developed. But I had then, 30 years of misery, you know, of like Man City being one of the worst, you know, terrible team that was relegated two divisions and all that sort of stuff. So I went through all that thinking, crikey, I made a decision, didn't I? And then obviously it all changed. But in terms of football memories, yeah, going and seeing those early City games at Main Road, the 1986 FA Cup final was a memory because it was standing at Wembley. It was the old Wembley.
Yes.
And I remember we got there early and we went with my best mate and his dad, and my dad took me. And they used to have the bollards. The standing bollards. They were just a metal bar like that. And we got in early and my dad went, well, this is a perfect place to stand. We're at one end. And he sat us on this bar and they stood behind us. So they had their arms on the bar. So they're behind us. And then it filled up and then it filled up. And then all the sort of the guys from the pubs came in and were pushing down. And I wanted to go home after 10 minutes into the kickoff. I wanted to go home. It was a memory of, I met an FA Cup final at Wembley and a memory of, this is the scariest thing I've ever been in.
Wow.
Because, and plus my bum was going absolutely numb on this metal bar, right? But my dad was having to push back to stop the fans from crushing us. And at the end of the bar, I remember seeing this guy collapse sort of thing and went under hit the bar, went under. They had to carry him down to the end and stuff because he'd made a mess of himself on this bar. And I kept saying to my dad, I want to go home. Even though like me and my best mate were Liverpool fans, we were like, want to go home. It's the scariest thing because it was just like this force of people. And I remember just going, what am I doing here? See, I'm supposed to be watching football, but yeah.
And then not the result you wanted on the day either?
No. I think I just enjoyed the experience. I honestly wasn't a big Liverpool fan. I wasn't, you know, my best mate was gutted, but I was like, I got to go to London and I got to see that. But yeah, it's one big memory I've got. Memories.
No, sorry, go on.
I was there when City won the title.
Wow. So
me and my dad sat there. Because we were season tickets holders for about 8 years or so. I stopped doing it once. I had a couple of kids and it was taking up too much of my time, so I stopped it, even though we were like, you know, the players we had and everything. I had to stop it because it was taking up too much of my time. Because, you know, you've got to drive to Manchester, you've got to be there, you've got to come back. And I was like, I've just wasted a day not seeing my kids. But yeah, I was there that day when and me and my dad just sat there so miserable. I mean, I've never been so miserable at a match in my life when we were like, we were going to lose to Man United in the league. And I remember just sitting there and I thought, we've thrown it all away. All we had to do was beat QPR and we've thrown it all away. And I remember being so miserable. And even when Dzeko scored, my dad's like, come on, get in. And I went, no. I said, no. That's just them trying to make us feel better about it. You know, we're still going to lose. And then I remember when Aguero scored, because you know you do that thing, don't you, where the ball's going up that end of it, so everyone starts to stand up. And I remember starting to stand up, and I remember that it just went in. And the place, I mean, it's giving me goosebumps now. Yeah. Me and my dad jumped up, and I cut my knee open, actually, on the seat in front. I literally hit the seat in front because I jumped up that high. And it was just... And like since then, everyone said, you know, Liverpool have won the title off you. And the season after, United won the title and you lost in the Champions League. And it doesn't matter because I went through 30 years of never seen us win anything. And I saw us win that league at that moment. And I was there. And even if City didn't win anything again, I've had my moments. I never had a moment like that. The only thing I'd had was playoff wins and stuff, which was great. And I'd actually been to the FA Cup final to see us beat Stoke, which was okay. But I was there at that moment. So like now when all my mates are Liverpool fans, all my mates are United fans, and they all give me stick and they say, oh, you know, we beat you. And I go, right, fine. I'm a football fan anyway, because I don't hate anyone. But because I've had my moment, I'm happy. It's just,
and you were there with your dad. So how more magical does that moment get?
That's it. It's like... It was a crazy thing. So yeah, there are 3 points of like young kid and then different things. But yeah, that's...
And then talking of City, can you give us an insight to the work that you've done for City over the years?
Yeah, well, yeah, like I said, my first project came from that David Silver illustration. Commissioned me to do like a team, you know, when you have like big bobblehead type characters with little bodies.
Yes.
And they just used that on all the kids' promotion stuff. So it was all around City. So it was like, it was on the walls inside the ground. So me and my dad would go around and see that. It was on all sorts of things, but it was never on products. It was just everything to do with stuff, even in the program and stuff. And then you look back and you go, how much do they charge for that? I had no idea, you know. But I did that, and then and I thought I was great because, you know, my first project, and even they interviewed me in the ground and stuff like that, and about the project and stuff, you know, and me and my dad in the new stadium and stuff. It was amazing. And then I thought, well, I probably won't work with City again unless it comes around, you know, it was just a one-off. And then, the agency got in touch with me again about some different Champions League stuff, which I did, which I enjoyed. And then I had a project to do some stuff for like a Chinese New Year project. So they wanted some simple portraits and stuff. And then I went in and they used them on some sort of promotions to send to China, which was good. But then they liked them so much, they said, oh, we want to use them on merchandise and stuff. So, and that was just a big deal for me because as a City fan, it was like, you know, seeing the stuff in the shop. And they even said to me, they said, oh, we're releasing a new kit. So it was like the new night kit or whatever it was. And they said, can you come in? And I said, oh, well, you can send me a picture of it if you want or whatever. It's up to you. And they went, no, you have to come in. We can't send you because they don't want me to release the new kit.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
So I went to the training ground at City and they had it there. They had this thing with the kit on and stuff. And I said, oh, can I take a picture of it? They went, no, you can just do a sketch. So I had to sketch what it looked like and try and remember. And I remember thinking, I've got to remember where the logo is and where the, you know, where the how proportions to that. Because I was thinking, don't just do it. And then I went home and I think in the end, they ended up sending me a screen grab because it had been released or it was going to be released.
Yeah.
And then there was, I think there was only five players. It was something like Kompany, Hart, Sterling, De Bruyne, Silver. And then they used them on like bags, and bottles and cards and different things. And I remember going with my wife, we sent the kids to school and I said, we're going to Manchester. And we went to Manchester and we went in the big shopping centre, I can't remember. The
Trafford?
The Arndale Centre in Manchester. And they had a City store, mini City store in there. And we went in and I'm looking around, it's not there. And then we went downstairs and there's this whole section just of bags and stuff. And I remember just standing there and Emma's like, we can't stay here all day. I was like, oh, I can stay here all day. I can literally stay here all day and try every T-shirt on. Because I don't know about you, but it's like I have those moments. Like I've seen your UEFA stuff. I mean, you must have had that moment when you saw that UEFA stuff in that corridor, in that room, and gone, wow, you know. You won't have thought, I've made it, but you thought, this is pretty good going.
Yeah.
But what I don't do is, and I know other people will be the same, is you go, that's great. Right, now what am I doing?
Exactly, yeah.
If you understand what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's like imagine a footballer wins the FA Cup and doesn't go, that's me, done for life. They go, next year, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And that's how you've come to go to be as an illustrator. I mean, you can't go, oh, well, I've got a great project, so I'll sit here now. What else can I do? What's that next thing? What's going to be that thing? So you can be excited for a period of time. I always imagine it like, you know, in football, when they sit in the changing room, and they look at the medal and they lift the trophy and they have the photos taken. And then as soon as they go home, they go, forget that. You know, what's next? What are we going to do next season? And you can always look back, but it's what's next, isn't it? But yeah, so for City, done some pretty good work for them. And then most recent work, some stuff that they actually use in the changing rooms and things like exercise rooms where they've got all the gyms and stuff. There's some stuff around in there. Not really allowed to talk about it, but it's in there.
I won't ask anymore. Well, if we look at your client list, I mean, Zlatan Ibrahimovic wouldn't mind that as his past history. Yeah. And apologies if I'm missing anyone out, but I know of Monaco, Juventus, Arsenal, Chelsea, Aston Villa. Any clubs I've missed off that?
Man United, I've been working for recently. Brentford, who are one of my big clients.
Oh,
really
sorry,
enjoy
yes.
working for them.
Yeah.
I've worked with Toulouse. I've worked with, crikey, Everton, Fulham.
Do these tend to be particular departments within football clubs that you work with? So those that manage the social channels, or is it ever the merchandising department or the marketing? Does it tend to be the same kind of interactions with the same departments in clubs?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you'll have people that work in clubs who are part of their media team or part of their comms team, who that's their job, to go and find some new, you know, creative work, or someone to create to find their work, and that's great because you get them contacting you direct, you know what they want, you produce it. And then a lot of times it might be a design agency that works with the club that is producing,
yeah.
You know, you produce work for them and then the club use it. So sometimes we're saying, right, well, I work for Fulham. Well, I didn't work for Fulham. I did work for an agency who did work for Fulham, you know, say yeah. Everton or whatever it is. But in my head, I work for Everton, so that's
yes,
fine.
Yeah.
But I think it's a bit like that. I think you'll get people directly who contact you. They're like, I think I've worked directly with Arsenal, directly with Chelsea, Villa, teams like that. And then other clubs, some other clubs like Juventus, City, things like that. It's usually an agency that gets in touch and says, oh, we're working with a club and we want you to produce this. But again, it's trying to form those relationships with both. So
yeah.
They can always come to you whenever they need anything.
A real standout case study in your portfolio for me, because I was so happy to see that this was done in this way, finally. The work you'd done for Monaco. So I'm going on their site, and where you've got the squad pages and the yeah. portrait photos that so often they can look, they can just not look good as a set if they're photos, because yeah. maybe one player's just been transferred in, so
yeah.
his spot is blank, or they're using a slightly older photo. But seeing the illustrative portraits that you've done of the Monaco squad, and that all together on the squad page, just looked beautiful, and it was great to see a club doing that.
It was the guy again worked for Monaco, and he'd just seen my stuff online on Instagram, and he just said he was a big fan and he'd love to work with me one day, and I didn't think anything come with it, you know. And then they just got in touch and said, want to illustrate the whole squad. And I don't even know if they were going to use it for the website. I think they were trying to produce
okay.
cards and things like that and different
right.
things. And then they said, what an idea it would be to use them on the website. But what you find with those sort of projects is that they want to commission you, I don't know, end of the season. And then they want everything well before the beginning of the next season. And it's
yeah.
that time to then illustrate 30 players or whatever in a certain style and whatever. And the hard work, those projects. But like you say, to they don't have, I'm not working with them now. They're using photography because it's so hard, like you say, to buy in and players and all these different things
yeah.
and get it sorted in the amount of time. But they did it. And I thought, I was really proud of it in the end. And then last season, I did it for Arsenal as well. So I produced the players and they used them as a sort of stats thing on each of their pages.
Yeah, yeah.
So that worked the same for them as well. So like you say, it's just so great that clubs are thinking, how can we use illustration? How can we do that? And especially now, because you can't have photographers going around, you know, photographers can't go and photograph every player, and all the players can't get together in one, you know, with COVID and stuff, you can't have these things happening. They've got, you know, I said it the other week, is it's got to be illustration and design that takes over these parts of the season, where it's like you look at the Everton stuff that's just gone out. Is it Callum?
Oh, right, yes. I saw photos of it on Times Square.
So basically, they've signed three players, and he has done three player illustrations that have been used on video, on the ground, all these different things, whatever it is. Yeah, and went on Times Square.
Callum Seymour. Yes.
And some of his work, he looked back at some of his work, it's really nice.
Yeah.
And they've obviously used that and then done it as their promotions. But what they didn't have to do was have photo shoots, and they didn't have to have that player who they probably just signed who's on holiday in France or away with the national team. They could do an illustration of him, get it to look how they wanted. Dynamic, exciting, still excites the fans, still communicates with the fans. But they didn't have to do a 20 grand photo shoot or whatever it is, you know, and set, get the kit at the right place and all those things. So what you hope is that actually for us as illustrators, these projects should get bigger and better.
Absolutely.
I think.
And is there any club out there that you haven't worked with as yet that that would be absolutely top of your list, even if it's just with the colours of the club that you'd love to work with, or there's something about the club's brand or that you'd love to...
I've always wanted to work with Preston North End only because they're so close.
Okay, yeah.
And because they're like the local team. But I don't
know. That's just as meaningful an answer as, I don't know, Boca Juniors, because they've just got such a gorgeous...
I could say, you know, I've worked with Juventus. It would be great to work with AC Milan, but, you know, great to work with Real Madrid and stuff like that. It would, but I've worked with some big clubs, and I think I'm going to say Preston North End only because a lot of my sort of friends and stuff are Preston North End fans, and the ground's literally like a 20-minute drive for me for here, some 25-minute drive, and I'm at the ground, and it'd just be nice to have that project that's local to me and maybe go and see it and stuff. I'd pick that,
And then looking at some of your non-football work, have you got a real love of basketball? Because I've noticed basketball portraits happening with you.
I think it sounds daft, and I'm not bored of football. I'm not, but I feel like I have to try something else, and that's a lot of the times that's in style, but also that can be in subject. So trying different sports out is just a way of illustrating things that you don't normally illustrate. You know, footballers do a lot of the same things. So when you're illustrating shooting or tackling or whatever, or a lot of portrait stuff, basketball players do things that you just can't understand. They can hang in the air for so many seconds. Yeah, they can do, you know, and I'm not a big basketball fan. I played a bit in high school and I loved it, but I don't watch a lot of basketball. And same with rugby and things like that. I mean, I work with England rugby because they'd seen my Juventus work and they got me to illustrate a lot of the things for a big tournament they have in it. And it was one of my favourite projects. And I was never a rugby fan. And I went down to an interview at Twickenham, and they took me around the ground and I had this interview, and then I did all this work for them, and they had them on huge banners and on the programmes and stuff. And me and my dad went to watch an England game against South Africa, and it was the best atmosphere.
Really?
Such a good atmosphere. Completely different to football.
Yeah.
The respecting it. There was South African fans in amongst us and nobody cared. And you were sat next to some of the biggest blokes, because everyone's like ex-rugby or whatever.
Yeah.
And you sat there, and there's points in the game where they do their kick. And in order to take the kick, the whole crowd goes quiet.
Yeah.
Away and home go quiet while they take that kick. And you think, imagine that. Imagine City versus Liverpool, and Salah's about to take a free kick, and all City fans go, shh. There's no way. You know, you're going to put him up, you're going to do whatever it is. You're going to swear, you're going to do whatever it is. And in rugby, every fan, you know, and even South Africa went ahead, and some of the fans jumped up, and the England fans did nothing. They just carried on watching the game. Whereas if that had been a Liverpool fan in the City, or, you know, or whatever fan, they'd have been torn out, wouldn't they? You know, wouldn't they? You know, you wouldn't get away with that. It was just such a good atmosphere. And so actually illustrating different sports, I find interesting. And basketball, I think, I really loved the Last Dance documentary. That sort of inspired me. And then I think I was trying out some different sports, and the LeBron James, when you actually understand what he's about and his game and how he plays. So then to think, how can I illustrate him so that he looks as powerful as he is, or as tall as he is, or as strong as he is? And you think to yourself, so what I tried was, and this was during COVID, was how can I rather than getting an accurate representation of LeBron, because you can go on Pinterest, put LeBron in illustration, and it will give you a thousand immaculate illustrations and dynamic illustrations of LeBron mm-hmm. that look just like LeBron. So I briefed myself on how can I make LeBron look powerful and huge and fast and strong and all these different things in a really simple way. And it's kind of come off because I've done some things and some projects have come off from it and stuff. I think you've not got to get too pigeonholed, have you? I mean, I know you do different types of work and you don't want to be always the guy that just does football. Yeah. I want to be an illustrator. So I want to do football because I love doing football stuff. But now and again, I want to do that Guardian job or that CNN job or that NBA job or that NFL job or whatever it is, so that it keeps interesting my head of what I'm doing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And with the football work that I do, because of the natural style of work I do, and my football work tends to be based on kind of architectural stadium illustrations or the slightly more editorial conceptual work. And frankly, part of that is because I see so much of the football work that's out there and done in an incredibly good way. I think, well, what can I do that is my thing, you know? And then it just goes from there. And then you find that the work that you do, you feel yourself has that wee bit more authenticity to it because you've wanted to produce something that is different as opposed to fitting in what you feel you should be doing because that's what you see other people doing.
But it's when we, because I think you did some work on it as well for Dave Will, the MIFA Missing in Football Action project. And
I was going to ask you about your Transformers.
Yeah, and I was like, it was because of you I did Transformers because there was it came up like, and I thought, rather than just doing, I want to pick the best footballers to illustrate and stuff and do my normal style, I always think, well, they're my opportunities to do something different.
Yeah.
So like Arsenal, for instance, I started off doing a certain style and then they said, what can you do different? So Arsenal had the confidence in me every time I produced an illustration for them, it was a different style and they just let me do it. So my experimenting was getting paid to experiment and come up with different styles that then led on to other projects.
Yeah.
Same with Champions League draw with Lee Moore and the BT project, you know, the Champions draw project.
Yes.
Do what you want. You've got this brief. You've got these two teams. Do what you want. So I took that and went, I'm going to do something completely different than I normally do because I'm getting paid for it and someone's asking me to do it. So again, the BT project did that. And I think with the MIFA stuff is obviously it's not paid. You're doing it for a charity and things like that. So this is your chance to go, well, I can do whatever I want. So I picked a couple of players, did a couple of players. And then I thought I'm going to pick a stadium. And then you look at a stadium and you go, oh, it's so intricate or it's so this. So you straight away, you don't want to do something that's really detailed because I'm not do detailed stuff that much anyway. And then you think, well, it's not dynamic because it's not moving. And then I was looking at your stuff and you're saying like, well, that's how you'd want to do it. If I didn't know your stuff, I'd have said something that has real impact, stylish, but doesn't need tons of detail, but you get across that it's that's what I would have done. And I sat there and I went, so if I can't do that, what can I do? And then Lindsay sat there and I sat there and I went, I thought, right. And I thought, well, what if a stadium could move? What if a stadium, you know, and then I started stupidly thinking about Transformers and stuff, you know, like if it was a person or whatever. And my original thought was, what if it was a person? And I thought, you can't do it as a person because it's that. And that's where Transformers came from. So I did Transformers stadiums. And it's one of those silly things that it kind of took off in terms of social media, in terms of people going torch. And no one's commissioned me from it. Maybe they will in the future. I don't know. But
you know, honest to God, though, I don't know if this has happened with you, but there are times when you see an artist's work that's got an idea behind it and you look at it and you think, yes, not necessarily myself, but how has that not happened before? Because it's just such an ideal execution. And I absolutely thought that when I saw your Stamford Bridge as a transformer. Has he even got a name? Has he even got a transformer's name?
No, I put it out there and said, what could they all be called? And someone came up with a brilliant one and I really can't remember what it was off the top of my head. But I didn't name the actual stadium, but there was a group of them and it was, someone came up with a brilliant name and I can't remember what it was. Yeah.
One thing
it'll come to me in a bit.
Yeah. It'd be great to hear from you about illustrating for animation.
Yeah.
So, and picking up maybe specifically on the work that you've done for The Guardian. So as an illustrator and working for and approaching a brief that is a static image as against something that's going to be animated, can you talk us through the process?
Yeah, I think in an ideal world, I would spend 2 months learning Procreate or something. I would learn how to animate and I'd animate my own stuff. And I could have done that in lockdown. I could have said, right, I'm going to take lockdown to learn it. And I'm never going to do it because I can't get that interest and excitement to do it myself. Yeah. So it's not going to happen. So if it's not going to happen, why am I forcing it to happen? I might as well do something else. But there's brilliant people out there that do it. And I think, like with the Guardian stuff, they saw some illustration work I'd done and they said, we really like it, but want to animate it. And I said, well, how do we do that? What do I create and what do I need to create? And a lot of times it's quite simple. A lot of times it's like, you don't need every frame. You just need to be the character creator and to show a few positions. So those illustrations for The Guardian, I think the first one was the Chelsea one that I did. And I worked with the animator and just said, right, I'll give you him standing, kicking a ball. And then they said, oh, actually, we want it to be funny. We want this to happen to him, or we want him to be grinning or winking or whatever it is. And then we just worked from there. And because it's quite a really simple, blocky style.
Yeah.
All my illustrations, it's all about the likeness. So I've got to get that likeness and then it develops from there. Whatever style it is, if I don't get the likeness, what am I doing? And those are so difficult to get the likeness because it's such a simple little shape. 3 or 4 elements that you've got to get. It's got to look like, you know, I can't remember where
I
illustrated.
I always remember your Conor McGregor.
Yeah, movie. Conor McGregor. Yeah, so I did that for them. So like, he's easy to illustrate, isn't he? Because once you've got the beard and the hair and the tattoo, it's him, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love doing that one. That was my favourite, that one for them.
And was that an art direction you had developed specifically for that because it was going to be moving and so you wanted to strip things back and make them quite kind of blocky and fun looking?
No, I just like I said before, sometimes I want to produce something that's really detailed and painterly, and I use my Wacom tablet and I do stuff. And then sometimes I want to produce something that's what can you get to the most basic thing? And that was one of those moments is, I can't even remember where the illustration that started that off in The Guardian scene. I can't even remember what it was, but it was, how can I illustrate this player so that people recognize it, but all it is a few shapes. And that's what it kind of got to. And I think like you say, like then an animator, they want Conor McGregor punching, kicking, and then in different kits and stuff like that. And then they want him in a ring, or they want, I think that one was really good because they wanted like different characters like Freddy versus Jason, and they wanted Superman versus Batman. So straight away,
remember you're being like, Alien in that as well.
Yeah, Alien Predator. So that's like dream project stuff because I was also developing that style. So it's not a style that, like quite a lot of my projects is, it's not something I've done 10 projects on. You know, where you feel comfortable. You know, you'll get a project and you'll go, I'm comfortable doing that because I've done this so many times before and I'll do it. Some of these projects like that, they'll go, oh, I've seen this one picture you've done of this. Can we now have Chelsea players or Conor McGregor in a fight scene with Mayweather or something? And you go, right, now I've got to get that style to work across that. And you do it, you know, touch wood, you know, I managed to do it because I think that's a skill set in being able to get that likeness of that person. And you know when you've not got it, and people soon tell you on social media when you've not mastered it or you've not got there. Yeah. But that's that trick of, can anyone, I'm not saying anyone can do a very detailed portrait. Not anyone can, but a lot of illustrators can. But not many illustrators can get, I'm a bit obsessed about Netflix series. What's it called? The creative one.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I know you mean.
Christopher Neiman, basically, he's on it.
Yeah.
And I've watched his episode 30 times. I love it. And I love the way that he describes things, because he says, one of the descriptions he has is like a heart shape. And he says that you could illustrate something or you could represent something that is a pulsing, blood-ridden, horrible-looking human heart and go, look, I love you. And you go, oh, like that. He said, but then you could take that to the most extreme thing and it'd just be a square block. And then you go like that and no one would know what that is. So somewhere between the two is the heart shape.
Yeah.
And it's like a level. So you can go from a highly detailed Photoshop painting all the way down to something that's a circle with two eyes and whatever, and that you still know that that's Zlatan, or you still know that that's Pirlo, or whatever. And that's my, I love going along that scale.
Yeah, yeah.
and being at the point, and sometimes I have to take myself to the extreme. And like I said, in lockdown, I took myself with LeBron to the extreme, and it worked because it someone saw it and liked it. But it's like, sometimes I go like that on the level.
Yeah.
And it's weird because you'll get projects at every part of that level. Because you'll get someone who really wants something detailed, or something that's, someone will want something that's really texturized and stuff, and someone will want something that's really a vector, and someone will want something that's simple and cartoonish. And I think it's that level, that scale of, and the Guardian stuff was definitely at that lower end of that scale, is how can you get it to that minimal bit, but people still know, oh yeah, that's such a body.
Yeah, yeah. And talking from a technical perspective, how do you produce the work that you produce? What kit, with kind of hardware and software? So going from, say, the real kind of almost painterly style work you do with these big glorious brush strokes to the slightly flatter, kind of more vector-based work.
Yeah, I think I, in the olden days, I'd have started sketching and stuff. I do that less and less. I think sometimes when I'm experimenting, I sketch more to try and develop something that comes naturally from the pencil rather than from a vector and a point. So
yeah,
I think I have to sketch now and again. When I have any free time, I sort of go, well, how can I make that? And that develops on something else. Most things start off in Illustrator. Even the painterly stuff, there might be a sort of a general premise of a sketch of proportions in Illustrator. And then it, in terms of like a more painterly thing, I take it through. I have a Wacom tablet, a Wacom screen that you can draw straight onto.
Yes.
And what I do with that is I take my sort of basic thing from Illustrator through into Photoshop, and then I've downloaded a load of brushes.
Yeah.
Who's that guy who's the famous guy with all his brushes? But basically I download all his brushes.
Yeah.
And then I just... either experiment with it, or I have certain brushes that I know that look good, or certain splatter brushes. I mean, I'm not in the, you know, the Dave Merrill scale where, like, I mean, some of the brushes he uses, I have no idea what he does, but they look amazing. Whereas I'm like, I've got three brushes that I know do this, this, and this, and then that's what I use. And you know, actually, you get people who go, they invent their own brushes so it tapers at the right point and all that lot. I just go, right, if I mess with that a bit, that one will do. And
That's your way.
You know, I embarrass myself sometimes.
We did speak to Dave Merrill the other day on this show, and there's a very interesting insight to how he creates some of his textures.
I have to listen out for that.
He's a great guy,
David. But his work is... Sometimes I feel ashamed when I've put some of my stuff out and I see his stuff, and the amount of time and effort and detail has gone into it and stuff. But
it is sensational.
So it's more than the vector stuff is all done in Illustrator, and even in Illustrator I try and sometimes use textures and stuff in there when I can, so I don't have to go anywhere else. But it's usually it's the last year has been very much more vector illustrator. Okay. And my whack on screen, I can count on the hand how many times I've used it in the past year. It's daft. I've gone completely one way with it at the moment. Yeah. And I probably need to, I will get bored and I will go and use it and or in my, get myself a new one or something, but I need to go back to it because I need to be doing that.
Yeah. I like to set myself a challenge. And also just for the sake of my hands, just getting them doing different things physically. So there's no kind of repetitive injuries or strains, but I'll sometimes set myself a challenge of right. I'm going to work on this brief with the touchpad on my laptop, or yeah. I'll use a mouse, or I'll use my tablet. So yeah. it's a wee bit of a technical challenge then for me, especially using the touchpad. But for certain work I do, touchpad is absolutely fine, and it gets me working my fingers in a different way and thinking in a different way.
Yeah, I think it's trying it with me. It's trying to. It's like a problem solving all the time.
Yes,
so like some people like doing a jigsaw, or they like doing a crossword or whatever. Me getting a likeness or working on a project, it's like doing a puzzle. It's like once you've cracked it, you're like, yeah, I cracked it. Then you carry on or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes you think to yourself, I want to add these sort of textures into my illustration, but how can I do that? And I'm not the type of person who goes online and watches YouTube videos and stuff. I can't do that. I can't watch someone else, because I'm always like going, get to the point. And then I can't be bothered watching it anyway. So I tend to just jump in it and mess about with everything until I've got what I want. So like, I did a project for the FA it was an FA Cup program, and it was like a more of a painterly picture style.
Okay.
But when I went into Photoshop to do that, like a Dave Merrill or someone could probably get watercolor washes to go and do what they wanted to do. And I couldn't get that. I couldn't work it out. So what I started saying, well, what if I took a vector basic thing and then took it into Photoshop and then used masking? So, you know, in Photoshop, you can select a solid shape or a color from whatever it is, and then you do the washes in it, and it doesn't break out and go everywhere and overlap. Actually, it creates that texture and that watercolor within that shape. And then you go to the next shape, and you go to the next shape, and you build it up. And in the end, I built a watercolor picture, and I'm not a watercolor artist, but I built a watercolor picture that looked like a watercolor painting and was in a certain style and stuff, and they loved it. So it was only for me going, well, how can I do it without actually doing a watercolor painting, or actually using these brushes in the way that they're supposed to be expected to? Actually, I can just take the essence of watercolor and do it my way, sort of thing. So it's only by messing about, experimenting and doing things wrong. You know, I don't know if young illustrators or people coming out there think that you have to get it right straight away. You really don't have to get it right straight away. You have to do 50 things wrong to know what's right, don't you?
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I always used to think about when you used to, you know, my kids will do pictures and they'll go, I've done it wrong, it's terrible, and throw it away. And I'll go, so do another one. When I was your age, I remember I used to do the Ghostbusters logo over and over and over and over again until I knew it off by heart. I used to draw certain things like mammoths. I remember now in my head drawing a mammoth, and I had it so that every time I could draw it from there, I could just go, mammoth. And like, I remember drawing Ghostbusters logo and going, that goes across there and his hand goes like that. So I knew it off by heart. And it's just like doing different things and experimenting till you get to the point where you go, actually, next time I do it, I know I don't have to do all that. I can just do this little bit. I do whatever. You don't have to do perfect work straight away.
Absolutely.
That's what I was getting to is, if you look at any artist in the world, I think there was something about Picasso or something the other week where they produce hundreds of paintings, like hundreds and hundreds of sketches and paintings to come up with the final painting. And the final painting might be hated by everyone, but they did hundreds and hundreds of paintings and sketches and studies to get to do the final one.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that all them were rubbish. It just means that they learned everything they needed to know to get to that final. They didn't just turn up one day and go, oh, I did a painting and look, it's going in the gallery, and then I'm going to do another one. You know, they did hundreds, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think some people, possibly younger illustrators who contact me, think that they've got to be brilliant and doing this work straight away and it's got to be this. No, actually, try loads of stuff. Try and do stuff that you're not used to, and then you'll learn something, you'll get something out of it. But the one day that, like, you know, sometimes you turn off a layer or you mess up some vectors and look at it and you go, wow, like, look at that.
The happy accidents.
Happy accidents are just like, and you go, oh, I can do something with that. And the next thing, you're doing a whole new style in it or something. You know, it's isn't it?
Well, then looking ahead to the next, well, it could be the next year, it could be the next 2 years. Give us an example of a dream Dave Flanagan brief. What would you be able to look back on during your retirement and think, yeah. Oh, yes, I got to do that. But not something that you've done so far.
Yeah. I used to always have a dream of working for England, and I've kind of done that a bit now. But I think I always had in my head, and this is going back to the animation thing a bit, but since I was a kid, every World Cup or European Championship and stuff has had like an animation build or a... do you remember the one that they did a few years ago for the Russia one where they had the animated Rush? That to me was like the pinnacle of design, animation, illustration. Have you watched the YouTube video, the It's Nice That video on the guy and stuff who did it?
Yeah, well, I used to work, well, I've worked for a couple of times with James Cross and Tim Jones, creative directors at BBC Creative.
Yeah.
So the BBC's in-house essentially creative agency who produced that work, and that's astonishing. Like the big weaved tapestry that then in itself animates. And have you seen the BBC Sport have done something beautiful for cricket this year?
Yeah,
such kind of expressive figurative work. So
it's kind of that if there was a World Cup on, and the BBC or ITV launched. Because it's a big thing, isn't it? When the BBC and the ITV launch that, they don't just go, oh, we're doing the World Cup. They go, the new advert, don't they? It's like an advert that builds it up.
It's like their identity for the tournament. Yeah.
A dream project would be like that. Because I know that on that project, the tapestry one, they got an illustrator to come in and create the illustrations of the players and stuff, and the style developed from there. He didn't animate it or whatever, but his style of those players is so beautiful. And if someone said to me, right, we're developing this style and you come in and create the players and stuff, and then it got shown, I think that would be a moment. I think that would be a dream thing. I mean, there's all sorts of things you could say. Otherwise, you know, you could say, I'd love to, you know, there's all sorts of projects you'd like to do. I mean, I was always jealous of, not jealous of, but I was thinking of where you could go with it when Steve Walsh's England stuff took off.
Oh,
that
was
in the really early days, wasn't it? And I remember like the England players going across and looking at the illustrations and stuff. And I remember thinking, you can do that. You can work with the England team and the illustrations can be on a wall and blah, blah, blah. And I think that always used to be the dream a bit. And I think now it would, something like that would just be epic, wouldn't it?
Yeah. But you can think now that in the same way that you saw Steve's work back then, that lit a fire inside of you.
Yeah.
Just think of how many people around the world will see your work and realize, wow, is that something I can do? Is that something that is possible? So that is, you know, you're now in that position that people are looking at.
I suppose you work on your own in your studio and all different things. You don't really see that as much. You do get messages and stuff, but there seems to be a lot of people interested in being sports or football or illustrators now than there used to be. But that is because of that, you know, the groundbreaking people from yourselves to Scott McCroy to, you know, Dan Layden, you know, all these people who did those projects and built that up as a thing. And then all these people want to be it. I suppose it is. It's, if you can inspire people, that's the best thing.
Well,
I mean, in truth,
is you in just turned four.
I just turned 43. Crikey.
Happy birthday for whenever
that
was.
No, not today. Not today. But I talked to this with a few illustrators and stuff And I would love to give, you know, like talks or...
Yeah.
Like I went to my old high school a while ago and talked to them. That was quite interesting.
Yeah.
And I'd love to do talks and things and just... Because, you know, you've got things to say. You've got experience and knowledge that someone, like you say, would go, oh, right, I've been doing that and I should have been doing that. Or actually, that really inspires me. I should do this more with this media or...
Yeah.
And... That I've got to that point where I'd love to be part of that. Whether that's in education, I don't think in education because I don't think anyone would employ me in that way, but I would love to sort of do talks and different things like that. And just
but that is what this podcast is about, and that is why we invited yourself. So here's the start.
Here's the start.
All right, time for the big question that everyone's being asked. So favourite football kit and favourite football boot. Now, this can be an emotive answer or it can be actually, I think this is visually the most aesthetically beautiful kit I've ever seen.
The thing is, right, is like, I follow you on social media. I see how many kits you have and your knowledge of kits must be immense. I haven't had that many kits in my life. I've not been a big kit. I enjoy kits, obviously, because I follow football. Yeah. I'm not a big kit design person, but so I was thinking back on it. I was thinking, which kit do I love? Which kit do I love? And the kits that got me inside when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it. Was probably one of the first kits that got me inside about kits was the silver Liverpool kit. And I don't even think it. You look back and go, you know, it doesn't look that great. But I remember at the time. Kids talking about the silver Liverpool kit.
With the candy sponsor.
Yeah, the candy sponsor. And I remember like kids at school going, there's a silver kit, Liverpool kit. And I remember wanting that kit when I was a kid. So that stuck in my head.
Yeah.
And then favourite kits. My favourite kit of all time is the Man City Kappa kit.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to say this. Honest to God, I really was.
There's been City kits throughout the years, and I love black and red stripes and all the classics, but it was the one kit that I made my dad buy me because it looked so different because everyone had the kit sponsor and the whatever, but the kappa went down the arm.
Yeah.
The black kappa went down, and I had the long sleeve as well. I made him buy me the long sleeve.
Oh, really? Wow.
And the kappa went down the arm. I don't even know if I've still got it in the loft, but it was a thick old shirt, you know, and it, you know, it probably it's not even that attractive, but... He had the kappa on, and I remember not knowing what kappa was and being excited by it. And I just remember that kit was just brilliant. And then they had the away kit, which was like the yellow and black stripe, which we played off in the player final.
Yeah.
And I think, it was a favourite kit. If I look back and go, a kit that, you know, I could say, you know, I really like last year, whatever it was, Nigeria's kit. And I really like some new kits are out, but I'll be honest with you. I like them because they're aesthetically pleasing. And those kits, I remember thinking, I'm so excited about those kits.
Well, I remember I don't know if it was the third kit, but there was the City Kappa kit that was, it was almost like the top half was a real blue. Then you had
I had that one.
Oh, really? I
had
loved that.
White and white at the bottom. Honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
To be honest, I forgot I had that kit when I was a kid. And you just reminded me, honestly, because I was in love with it. I remember just thinking it was like, nothing I'd seen, and I don't buy kits. I buy my kid, my lad kits and stuff, but I'm not like you. I don't have tons of kits. I mean, the only things, the ones I bought over the years, like I bought a Roma. I remember the Roma kits I used to like because they were like the tight fitting.
Yeah,
and I used to think that was better than the bulky shirts you used to get. Roma had these tight. I used to like that when I was thinner. that kit, the dark blue, the red stripe, and then the white.
Yeah.
Kappa kit, sends back memories, that.
And how about boots? You much of a boot guy?
No, right, but the reason I'm not a boot guy is, like, when I was growing up, I don't know what it was about my feet, but I didn't have big feet, but I had long feet, like narrow feet.
Okay.
So whenever I used to get excited with my dad said, we're going to buy some new boots. So I'd want to try every boot in the shop. I'd want to try Puma, Nike. I'd want to try everything. But the only ones that fitted me properly were Adidas boots. So Adidas boots just seemed to be a longer shape for my foot, and they just, that was it. So every now and again, I would go, right, I'm not going to have an Adidas boot. I'm going to have a Nike boot. And then my feet would be shredded like blisters. And I'd even think, oh, I'll work my way through the blisters. No, they would kill me forever.
Oh, yeah.
And then Puma, because they're sort of, they seem to be a more compact shape, whatever size. So for years, that's it. Adidas has been my boot. And I remember when they brought out the, because all my mates would have fancy boots and stuff. They brought out the Predator.
Yeah.
And I remember just like, what is that? That is an Adidas boot, which is, and I remember the, you know, obviously you had Beckham and everyone and stuff like that. And I even watched the program, and was it, what was it Johnson who invented it?
Ex-Liverpool player, the Australian player.
Yeah.
I want to say Michael Johnson, but it's not Michael Johnson.
I think it's Michael Johnson, something like that.
Okay.
And I watched the thing on him inventing them and stuff. And I remember just thinking they were just, and the original ones weren't, they were proper thick ridges. Not like now, yeah, where they're just like little tiny. They were proper thick ridges.
Yeah, yeah. Really, really stood up and off the. And do you remember the Adidas stripes on the side? They were thicker on one end and they tapered and were kind of rounded on the other, the stripes, almost as if it was like a claw.
I don't remember that.
I'm a Predator guy, so you're asking the right man.
It was just, I think it was just because it was, you know, I remember playing myself and lads would turn up with like white or pink boots, and I remember like, because I've always been black boots, that's it, I don't want a colour, black boots or nothing.
Craig Johnston, just to let you Craig know Johnston. I've just done a wee, yeah, research
Johnston. But yeah, I want black boots. And when I go into shops now and the other ones that fit me like bright orange and stuff, I won't have it. I'll find a black boot because I won't have it. Because it was driven into me, because when I used to play like 16, 17 with older guys.
Yeah.
And if someone turned up in white or pink boots, you were kicked around the park. You know, you were literally like, it was drilled into me that if you bought some white or pink boots, you were a fancy dad and they'd kick you up and down the park. So, yeah, so I...
Phil Galloway gave a very similar story as well.
Oh, right, yeah.
About that, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's a legend, Phil Galloway, isn't he? Crikey. If he's in his stuff for Arsenal and for Norwich.
Yeah,
the Arsenal
absolutely.
Stuff. I was watching the Arsenal video. These Arsenal videos are blowing my mind. I just love them. Like last season's when they did it like quite grungy and stuff like that, and the Ian Wright ones and stuff, and I loved it. And then these new ones are just, because they've obviously had to work through COVID as well, and they've said they commissioned people like Phil to do those. And I watch them and I just think they're brilliant. And then you watch it and you go, that's not Phil's work, is it? And I was watching it because it's like panning through that 3D world. I was like, it's not. Is he what a Christian film? And then he's like, next thing he's posting it off, and it's like, what? That's crazy stuff.
Yeah. I see this morning he's got there's a really great photo of Ian Wright rocking the Adidas t-shirt with his Kieran Tierney on it. So, yeah. Phil's having a good day.
He's got his style, hasn't he? And it's just, people love it. Because it's just, it's different again from everything else is producing. And it's just, it's really good. It's just, I met him a couple of years ago. Really, really nice guy. We had a proper laugh. He's a really, really nice guy. I met him and Dave Merrill at this thing. And it just, you could tell he just loves football and he's like, loves his work and stuff. He works pretty hard, I think.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he does. Yeah.
Happy Dave.
He's harder than me.
It doesn't sound like it. So, Dave, can you remind people where they can find you online, please?
Yeah. So, like, my website's daveflanagan.co.uk and Twitter's at Dave Flanagan and Instagram's at Dave Flanagan 77. That's all I've got, really. I'm not a TikTok man or anything like that, so I don't know what the new things are, but yeah, that's just me. When they die out, I probably will.
Well, I highly recommend everybody to go and follow Dave for as much as you can, even if it's to see all of the different art direction variants that are possible. Very, very adaptable man, absolutely. So Dave, it's been brilliant talking to you today, and thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Good man. Thank you, Dave.
Speak to people. See you later.
Cheers. Thank you.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists, and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.